Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Aha, feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, not once, not twice, not three times, not four times, five times, maybe six. It's time to hoop it up.
It is time to hoop it up. It is time to hoop it up. It is time to hoop it up. It's time to hoop it up. It's time. It's time to hoop it up. Happy to be here with you, Steve. Recording on a Thursday morning, a little bit of a change of pace. Ready to have some fun, get into some news items, get into even more news items, talk a little bit of free agency as it hasn't started yet, but it's kind of started yet. Allegedly, we'll talk about some of the rumblings that are coming out so far. We'll flip to the W side for a little bit, get to some takeaways, and then we have some fun mailbag questions, including one that we're going to close with that I spent entirely too much time thinking about and gathering notes for. So shout out to the dunkers that sent in questions. Again, you don't need a prompt. If you have basketball questions, NBA or WNBA, naturally prioritizing the W side since that season is actually still happening, but you can send questions in on either side, dunkerspot@yahoo.com. If you have them, we will get to them. We start on the NBA side with a little bit of coaching news, not dead coaching news. The Pistons firing head coach Monty Williams on Wednesday. After 1 year, and while having lots of money left on the contract, we will leave it there. That report first coming from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN. Per James Edwards of The Athletic, some names to keep an eye on with this now new coaching search. James Borrego, whose name has been linked to the Cavaliers job and the Lakers job. Sean Sweeney, the lead assistant slash head of defense in Dallas. Johnny Bryant, the associate head coach of the New York Knicks. Mike Anori, the lead assistant with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Jerome Allen, who has assistant coaching experience. And Chris Quinn, who's currently an assistant with the Miami Heat. Steve, I guess just initial thoughts of the Pistons move, because I was not expecting to get that notification yesterday.
I was stunned. I wasn't ready for that. I literally was like, wait, what? What do you mean? It just popped out and I'm like, okay, trying to process it. You know, the number one thing is, you know, jokes aside, everyone wants to talk about the contract and the years left and all that good stuff. I hope Monty Williams is okay. Like, I hope he is at peace. He's gone through a whole lot. So, like, we can't forget that portion of it. And he wasn't even going to coach. And then they made that historic offer. And, okay, I'm a coach. And that season happened. And that's a lot to process. You know, you're trying to bounce back. And, you know, even with things beyond the court, that's tough. The thing for me is, okay, what direction are you going in if you're Detroit? Who are you going to choose? Which way are you going to go to try and bounce things around? That's where my mind went to next. Because I don't, it's a tough spot because you just got a new regime front office wise. And so they're going to be able to choose who they wanted, but they kind of had ties. You know what I mean? It kind of gets a little thing because they just hired an assistant coach for the coaching staff, but will now have a new head coach, which is a very interesting dynamic. I'll put it that way. So it's going to be interesting. I'll leave it there.
Like, I think for me, I'm glad you pointed out one, just hoping Monty's okay. Like, we are talking about humans when we're talking about basketball, as much as we love to talk about basketball. And as you mentioned, like, Monty has dealt with a lot. And even if you keep it just basketball, like, the end of the Phoenix run was a lot, which I think led to the decision, okay, well, fine. This job is done with. I'm just going to relax. Even if I get back into it later, I'm just going to take some time after all of that. And to jump immediately into the Pistons job, and you have so many different lineup and personnel decisions to try to sort through with that roster. It's a mix of we are accumulating young talent and we have salary cap space, but we ain't a free agency destination right now. Let's be a bit of a dumping ground to get more assets, et cetera. Now you got all these bigs you're trying to sort through, et cetera. That's a lot. Then you examine the actual Pistons season, which included a 28-game losing streak. That's a lot. And as you mentioned, now new regimes generally want to pick their own guys, et cetera. But then once you factor in what last year was like, again, I'm less surprised that the move was made and more so that, you know, more just win a game. I felt like if that was a decision that was going to be made, it would have been earlier in the offseason. So at least you have a time to get in and talk to like all the potential coaching candidates. As again, like James Borrego in particular, he's already linked to two other jobs right now. And with the Cleveland job in particular, which, you know, reading different reports from different folks, like it feels like he is just the front runner for the Cleveland job. If you're Detroit, I don't have sources or anything like that, but I would imagine if you really want Borrego, it'd be kind of tough to convince him to take that job versus the Cleveland job, considering where Cleveland is right now and like the core three or four they have. This is also just an interesting offseason for Detroit in general, as I think Cade Cunningham is extension eligible right now. And Cade hasn't had a healthy run in Detroit yet. I am a believer in the talent of Cade Cunningham. We have seen in each of the last two seasons when he's been healthy and he's been able to go on the run with the jumper in particular, what kind of passer, what kind of scorer, when engaged, what kind of defender he can be. So I don't have like real talent questions to that degree, but you have a big financial commitment coming up. And in order to maximize Cade, you have to have, there's a level of shooting that Cade needs around him that Detroit just flat out has not had during this era yet. That's going to require more movement. And it's going to be interesting to see how this new regime goes about complementing Cade, whether he gets the extension next week or if they just wait until next offseason, play the restricted free agency game, et cetera. Whenever they decide to go into contract talks with Cade, either way, you're going to have to build the boat around him. And I'm curious to see what that looks like. But again, with Monty, like, I hope he's okay. Like, Steve already alluded to the jokes, like, with that amount of money, like, imagine that's helpful to still be able to get that. But that is just a lot of turmoil and a lot of things to process in a short amount of time. So I do hope Monty's all right. And with Detroit, very dull analysis here, but you have some important decisions coming up. And you have to nail this to propel yourselves into the next stage of this rebuild that has just been, you know, it's kind of been wheels and spinning in mud for a little bit. So it's going to be important for them to nail this coaching hire, whoever it is. And then from there, draft, free agency, are you able to add the right complementary talent? Because there were some really intriguing flashes last year from Cade, from Jaden Ivey. As he got more playing time, got more comfortable running ball screens, got more comfortable inside the arc. You have talent to work with. It's not the most complimentary talent right now. So, I you know, again, they have to nail it this offseason so they can really enter phase two of this thing. Did you have any other, I guess, outside of coaches, just any general Pistons thoughts heading into the offseason?
Not right now, just because it's okay, what are they going to do in the draft? How are they going to use the space that they have? Like, I think this is very much a, I need to see what the next step is. And that, you know, Trajan Lehnen just got there. So I'm very much in wait and see mode to see which direction they want to try and go to.
Okay. Makes sense. Sticking in the East, sticking with the division, actually. The Pacers and Pascal Siakam expected to agree to a 4-year, near $190 million max contract. Expected to be officially agreed to and signed on July 6th. That also comes from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN. Pascal averaged 21 points per game, 58% on twos, 39% on threes, 70 from the line, 8 boards, 4 assists during the regular season with the Pacers post-trade. In the postseason, nearly 22 points per game again, 59% on twos, 30% on threes, 62 at the line. Don't love that portion, but was an interior threat. The post-ups, the ISOs, the drives, the spins on those drives really popped throughout the postseason run, especially when Tyrese Haliburton went down. 7.5 boards, 4 assists during the playoffs as well. Feels like a no-brainer to secure Pascal if you can secure Pascal, because otherwise, why'd you trade those assets for Pascal? But very excited to see what a full season of Pascal the Pacer looks like. And this is what the Pacers also having a little bit of money to play with, depending on how they deal with certain options and stuff. A lot of internal growth could be made there with the talent that they have on the roster. But in general, just excitement for Pascal Siakam. I'm sure he's happy to just be somewhere secure and with a surefire. Well, nothing's guaranteed in the NBA, duh. But as far as team with upward trajectory that just made a deep playoff run, you could probably feel good about that. Pascal talked about how happy he was after the conference finals, but recognizing, hey, we still got work to do. We can't just hang here. But happy for Pascal. Happy for the Pacers as well.
I mean, you went out and got him. You have Tyrese Halliburton. Now you have Pascal for the next few years. And now you continue to build. Like, I think Pascal fits what Indiana needed, his style of play with their pace, with his driving, with his shot making, his versatility. The defense also helps. That's a big piece of what Indiana needed. And now they kind of just go forward. So it makes a ton of sense for Pascal, for Indiana to try and keep building that way. I guess the biggest question now is, okay, what's next? How do we improve on what we've done so far now that we have these pieces in order? You know, it was hard to imagine Pascal leaving when A, as you said, they gave up that many assets to get him. And B, I mean, it was doing things that Elgin Baylor and Wilt Chamberlain only did to start the playoff run. So I kind of get where everyone's just like, this is the move. So it'll be interesting.
It's going to be fun in Indiana. It's going to be fun in Indiana. The only other official free agency news, unless I missed something in the transition wire, in which case I'll get to it on the Tuesday episode. But the only other thing I saw, Warriors guard / small, big, whatever you wanted to classify Gary Payton II as, opted into his $9.1 million player option. That coming from Kendra Andrews of ESPN. Gary Payton averaged 5.5 points, 2.6 boards, an assist and a steal in 15.5 minutes off the bench last season. As I've enjoyed with GB2 in particular, the screening from him and the way that Golden State's able to invert the offense that way. 1.1 points per possession on any trip featuring GB2 as a pick and roll screener. That is 18th out of 252 players to set at least 100 direct picks. That coming from Second Spectrum. So the value still there, even in an uneven season for the Golden State Warriors. You can see what kind of value he adds in that particular aspect. Well, I just want to see more Gary Payton II. Honestly, I think that's the real thought I have there. Like, happy for him, get your money, et cetera. Has a clear-cut role. We know how good he is defensively. And again, the cuts, the screens, also helping that half-court offense. I just want to see him get more playing time. I want to see him play in more games. Like, between this stint and the Portland stint, like, it hasn't been the healthiest run for him. So hopefully we just get to see
more. That was my thing. The last 2 years, I feel like it's just been battling injury, battling injury, battling injury. So for Golden State to know that he's going to come back, if he can continue to stay healthy, that helps them in the next run, depending on, you know, who they have. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Mm-hmm. Got you. Before we move to the W section, just quickly on the free agency front, free throw adjacent. Whose free agency is intriguing you the most right now?
Paul George.
Yeah. Like, I'm just... Once Kawhi got the extension and we just didn't hear anything on Paul George like that, I was like, this seems odd. This is interesting. How much of this is leverage, especially as, he is one of the like 12 stars that have been linked to the Sixers at this point, as the Sixers are like the one, championship hopeful that has legitimate cap space heading into the offseason. How much of it is just leverage? Like, hey, LA, I want my max. Give me my max, or I will go here and get a max. And how much of this is just real? Because it does feel like this is teetering closer to like PG feeling a level of disrespect. Now, whether you think that's valid or not, that's for you to argue about. That's not for me to argue about. But it's feeling more and more like, oh, he might actually head to Philadelphia or insert team that can execute a sign and trade here. And that really. It just catches the brow because I think PG is still obviously very good. Like, I still think he's an all NBA caliber talent. He's certainly an all-star caliber talent. We know what kind of impact he can provide on both sides of the ball. I guess this just made me kind of think about what exactly is the ideal role for PG at this stage of his career. I think on any given night, he can be number one option. He has proven throughout this Clipper stretch, the OKC stretch, he is fine with being number two or slotting to number three if the talent allows for it. Like, I think part of the value of PG is just him being able to shape shift in terms of the role. But I do think for him, especially like listening to his pod, you can tell there is an element of, yes, I'm good and I can do all these things. I would like to know what I'm doing and be content and firm in this is my role. This is what I have to do. I can just focus in on this versus having to move up and down, up and down, up and down the hierarchy based on injury or just whatever the roster or the game calls for. And him making the comments about like, he wants to play somewhere where they're playing basketball the right way. I'm just like, is that a shot? Is that, are you alluding to a specific team in that regard? Like outside the Clipper realm? Like, I'm just really interested to see what happens with the PG saga.
I mean, for me, I think it's a tough part about having versatility is eventually you kind of just end up spread out through boxes. So I think when he talks about the right style of basketball, the fit in the context is going to be the most important thing. And so how do these dominoes fall is going to be very interesting. Who does what and where does he go? Obviously, Philadelphia is going to be attached to every name possible because, hey, they got room and they got Embiid and Maxey. The thing is, Paul George can fit anywhere. The question is now, who's going to enhance and have Paul George impact their team in the biggest way? And so that's where it gets interesting because, again, you can use him off ball, you can use him on ball. Which team needs him in a certain role to now make them better? That's what I'm looking to see. Like, where does that kind of change or move the needle?
I got you. I know we're going to hear a lot more over the next couple of weeks. So we'll end up doing like a full-blown free agency episode relatively soon. But I want to get some early thoughts there. And before we head out of here, we're talking about stars or star-level talents that may be moving teams or at least maybe playing the leverage game, et cetera. But a whole lot of Klay Thompson talk. Since the season has ended. And even before then, he remains linked to the Orlando Magic, which talk about a team that could use some shooting. Klay would certainly fit there. Still very much trying to parse out like how much of that interest is real versus, hey, I'll do it. This team is young and good. They got money. I'll do it. Hey, Golden State, I promise I'll do it. Don't make me do it, et cetera. So just keeping an eye on that front again as the actual free agency period starts. And people can sign places July 6th. I think that's where it's going to perk up. But keeping an eye on Klay Thompson and the Warriors situation. I think I will cap it there. On the W side, catching up on some news earlier in the week. Brittany Griner of the Phoenix Mercury, Aaliyah Boston of the Indiana Fever named players of the week. Brittany Griner, 26.5 points, 9 boards, 2 blocks per game during that stretch. Aaliyah Boston averaging 20 points, 13 rebounds, nearly 4 assists, and 2 blocks during that stretch. Just a quick salute to them. We talked about Brittany Griner on the last pod, the way she has slotted into Phoenix's offense, being able to be a valuable screener, being able to be a present threat in the pick and roll attack, but also just being a monster on the block. Brittany Griner remains someone that you cannot defend one-on-one, at least not comfortably. And Aaliyah Boston, finishing shots, getting more touches on the block, getting more touches, period. Just feels a lot more comfortable in the Indiana Fever offense. So it's nice for her to get, you know, his weekly recognition, but it's a very loud reminder of she was Rookie of the Year last year. She was an All-Star last year. She had a fringe All-W case last year. She's really good. Maybe the slow start within a new offense and new personnel is indicative of the player that she is. So just nice to see her have this run. Nice to see the Fever as a whole have this run. We'll talk about the Fever a little bit more in depth on the next episode of the Dunker Spot. That is what we in the business call a tease. But just wanted to give quick shout outs to Brittany Griner and Aaliyah Boston for the weeks and just the way that they're playing overall. Steve, did you have BG or Aaliyah Boston thoughts?
Brittany Griner, again, we talked about it, has changed the context of what the Mercury are doing. And you can now feel that impact. I think with Aaliyah Boston, it's just been the aggression, the drives that stood out to me, the usage. Getting back to those high lows, getting back to, hey, you know, I could hand this off, but I'm actually just going to turn the corner hitting first. I think that's been really fun. So it's good to kind of see Aaliyah Boston remind people just the level of talent that she has.
And like even with the cold scoring stretch and just her trying to find her way offensively, like it hasn't felt like a bad defensive season for Aaliyah Boston. I thought she was firmly good as a rookie as a defender last year. I thought she was a pretty solid defender overall last year. Like that's largely carried over this year. So like even as she was finding a way offensively, there was still positive impact being made. But it's nice to see just both sides come together. And again, you've alluded to the Fever's schedule. We've talked about the Fever schedule a lot on the pod at this point as they started with an absolute gauntlet. The schedule has lightened as of late, which will, you know, naturally help some of the efficiency numbers team-wise, some of the efficiency stuff with Aaliyah Boston in particular. But you could just see them getting a little bit of rest, them actually getting some practice time, and just in general, as the sample grows with them playing together, you're starting to see more chemistry. You're starting to see more flow. And this is what it can look like. You can get the pick-and-roll attack with Caitlin Clark or her flying off ball. You can have Aaliyah Boston being used as a legitimate hub or just getting the post-ups. Kelsey Mitchell, score all over the place. Melissa Smith, score all over the place. So it's just been a lot of fun. Quick shout outs there. On a more somber note, we'll breeze through the injury section. Sparks big Cam Brink suffered a torn ACL and she is out indefinitely. Safe to say she will be out for the rest of the season. She finishes her rookie campaign, averaging 7.5 points, 5.3 rebounds, shade under 2 assists, a steal and 2 blocks. Was ranked 3rd in the WNBA in blocks per game at the time of the injury. Very dull analysis here, but that just stinks. For Cam Brink, had already shown that she's one of the best interior defenders in the league as a rookie. And the offensive flashes were tantalizing, especially with her being used on the perimeter, showcasing a willingness to knock down threes or take threes rather, her being able to attack from the perimeter. Like, the future is still going to be bright, not going too far, but it stinks that the rookie season is being cut short. And with her being out, naturally no more Sparks games for her, but she was named to the Team USA 3-on-3 roster as well. So Team USA going to have to fill her spot there. I'm sure we'll get more news on that front relatively soon, but just wishing a speedy recovery to Cam Brink. And I really enjoyed watching her play this year and I can't wait to see her play again.
That's a bummer, man. Shout out to Cameron Brink. I think when you look at it, part of the fun was you saw, a lot of what she does is going to translate in a different environment. She has more space to operate. She can do more things. So you saw the growth as far as not only can I take and make these threes, I'm going to drive from the perimeter. I'm going to drive and kick. I'll create that way in the post. Okay, I might take a hit. I might get pushed around, but I'm still going to get to my spot. And now you saw the adjustment to, well, what happens if I just go quick when I get a post up? How much does that hurt teams? You saw the defense pop immediately with the weak side rotations, the timing on those, being able to protect the paint. That was very fun. But it was more the buildup, you know. Sometimes when it comes to young players, it's fun to watch them grow in that environment. So you look at a Sparks game and it's like Cameron Brink trails and now they go inverted pick and roll and Cameron Brink's going right into a pull up. And it's like, oh, there's even more that could be done. And so it's kind of a shame that that's just kind of taken off the table. Wish her a speedy recovery. Just a bummer, especially with the Olympics coming up. It's tough.
Yeah. I don't like that. I was pulling up her game log very quickly. I was like, it didn't feel like she had a game without a block or at very least without some sort of defensive stat. And sure enough, outside of the Connecticut game, she played 3 minutes and 37 seconds before eventually, you know, suffering the torn ACL, had at least a steal or a block in literally every game this season. Which again, like, those stats don't automatically make you a good defender, but watching Cam and not only seeing her get her hands on the ball or just swatting stuff into the third row, watching the amount of drives where guards felt like, ooh, I got my defender beat. Oh, that's Cam rotating over. Let me dribble to the other side of the basket. Let's say if we get a second drive going, let's move her out the way first. Seeing a rookie have that kind of impact early on was just, it was really fun stuff. It was really fun stuff. So I just hate that, again, rookie campaign getting cut short. Got to extend the learning curve a little bit there. I do think her being able to be around her teammates and being able to soak up that film and still being, you know, just generally around is going to be helpful to her while she's out, but it's not the same as getting game reps naturally. So again, wishing a speedy recovery to Cam Brink. While we are wishing speedy recoveries, wings forward Maddie Segrist suffered a broken finger in Monday's game against the Minnesota Lynx. She is also out indefinitely. The Wings did sign Morgan Burch to a salary cap hardship contract, with the Wings having 8 healthy players. And from the press release from the Dallas Wings announcing the injury / the signing, the Wings previously signed Monique Billings to a hardship contract. Monique Billings is playing well. Following the injury to veteran forward Natasha Howard, one hardship contract must be terminated when the Wings have 9 standard players able to play, and the other must be terminated when the Wings have 10 standard players to play. So I believe Natasha Howard is expected to be back sometime early July, if not earlier. So we may have some roster movement whenever Natasha Howard is back. And again, depending on how long Maddie Segrist is out, or if Arike comes back and she missed the game with Achilles soreness, we're going to get a little bit more movement on the Dallas Wings. But this has just been such a ridiculous season from them from the health point of view.
Well, I was just scrolling real quick. Obviously, recording on Thursday. The Wings have a game on today, and Kehlani Brown is out for that game.
Oh, jeez.
I don't know what's going on with the wings. I believe Arike is questionable, game time decision. Natasha Howard listed as doubtful, which is upgraded from out, but, you know, Satu out, Maddie out, Jaylen Brown out. I don't know what's happening with the wings. I don't know.
I just want everybody to be okay. I'm sure there's going to be a study at some point with just the amount of early season injuries that we had this year compared to prior years. Like this being an Olympic year and the schedule being a little bit more condensed. I'm sure at least plays a role. Maybe not the exact reason why all these things are happening, because it is basketball at the end of the day. Things just kind of happen on the injury front sometimes. But I'm sure there'll be some in-depth research at some point this year on what happened, because it's just been a lot. And I have not seen an official update yet, but at least worth noting as we record on Thursday morning, we did have a Ryan Howard injury suffered last night. Looked like an ankle. Can very least called a lower body injury. So hopefully we get some news at some point throughout the weekend. Hopefully it's nothing serious. But that ankle turn or whatever it was did not look good. Had to be helped off the court. So we keep an eye on Ryan Howard as well, who is also part of the 3v3 roster. So again, if it is something long term, that also affects the Team USA team. But turn off injuries. We say that a lot on the NBA side. We've got to say it on the W side as well. It is insane. As far as general W thoughts, any teams or players you want to shout out?
Well, I'm going to pass it right back to you. Would you like to talk about Chelsea Gray's return?
I would indeed.
The Aces lineup.
I would indeed. Passing the rock, set the offense in the first, get more aggressive in the third. You know what I mean? But no, in all seriousness, Chelsea Gray did make her return. I'm going to get into some brighter news on the injury front. Also, got a good chuckle at myself as we talked about Chelsea Gray on the last pod. And I was like, well, looking at the schedule, it feels like they'll get through this Wednesday game against Seattle. Big win. We'll get through the Friday game against Connecticut. Then there's just like a big gap in the next game. Becky Hammon said she'll be back soon. So I'd imagine if she's going to be back, it'd probably be next week. Plays the next game. So I will.
Hey, no shades of gray there, bud.
And tell you what, hands are open, L in hand. That is fine with me. But Chelsea Gray makes her season debut last night. She checks in and the crowd absolutely loses it. Standing ovation, packed crowd in Vegas. First real offensive possession is a pick and pop on the left wing with Alicia Clark, and it is an assist. It is her 1500th of her career. And it's like, well, that didn't take long. A little bit later, here's a full court pass. It's like, oh, Chelsea's back. We got a behind the back pass to Jackie Young. We got them flowing out of pistol, and here's Alicia Clark on a slip. Here's an assist. Here's a Kelsey Plum cut that she hits. It's like, ah. The offense looks and feels a little bit different. And like outside of just general joy that Chelsea Gray is back and the joy that she plays with, which very evident that the players missed that. Just watching the timing of her passes compared to what it had been, how much earlier Asia was getting hit on some of her relocations and cuts to the basket. Again, like the Kelsey Plum cut in the second quarter that led to the Kia Stokes three that led to a Seattle timeout. Like watching Chelsea nail that pass. The pick and rolls with her and Alicia Clark and just how early she was hitting Alicia as the switch was happening for Seattle. It's like that timing and that randomness was just missing from this offense. It just felt like before Chelsea was there, if you switched against the Aces, like they can still score because they still have a level of top end talent that can't be matched by many teams in the league. But in terms of hitting the slips or when teams try to load up and you get some cuts in, the timing on the passes weren't the same. The placement of the passes weren't the same. And thus, like, they weren't creating the same advantages when the initial action was taken away with switches. And Chelsea immediately flipped that on his head. And so just watching the slips be more alive, the cuts be more alive, it just adds an element of randomness to the offense that was sorely missing. It adds some pace and tempo to the offense that was missing. Because again, if it was a switch and we just bog it down, now it's catch and hold depending on who gets it. We're moving it to the second side, or you may have the flash from Asia, but it's taking 2 or 3 seconds to get to that. With Chelsea, like, it is just a pass. Your defense now has to react. And so watching them get back into more of the driving kick and puncturing space, it was just really nice to see. And defensively, like, you got the early, I want to say the second quarter steal from Chelsea that led to another full court pass that was deflected. That would have been just one heck of a highlight there. But hearing her talk while she was on the defensive end and navigating things, like, you can tell she's certainly not at peak performance right now defensively. But just her presence alone changed a lot for the Aces. And it was just nice to see that again.
I think it was the passing stood out immediately. But it's funny because there's a lot of talk of, hey, the Aces' offensive flow, can they get the offense back? It's still been very good. But then you look at that game and it's like, okay, the Aces have kind of had these record scratch moments. And it's like, okay, it's cool to see Asia flash into the elbow and they see if they continue it. And then you remember, oh, that's right. Chelsea Gray elbow hub. Mm-hmm. We can just hit Chelsea Gray and now there's screening, there's cutting, there's randomness. You don't know what's happening. You don't feel as comfortable as a defense. Whereas, okay, maybe we can just go under against Kelsey and Jackie. Maybe we can switch some of these things. There's a randomness to it to where, hey, Alicia Clark setting the screen, you switch it, now it's a slip and it's a bucket. We got spacing. That just opened things up. And you saw the ability for, you know, when the ball flows to Chelsea Gray in the middle of possession, how different that is as opposed to where do we go? Well, actually, no, just bring it over here. Come set a screen, quick pocket pass. You got to react. That's tough. So you saw the Aces again, once again, be the Aces. And it was fun to kind of watch the combination of what Chelsea Gray brings to Asia Wilson's movement off ball and her coming off screens. And now you're able to combine that to where it's Chelsea Gray giving a handoff to Asia. And it's like, well,
what in blazes do we do with that?
And I think that's one of the dynamic elements where you just don't feel as comfortable guarding some of those actions. You know, we've talked about how difficult Chelsea and Asia are together in action. But if Chelsea's now the initiator, well, heck, I don't want my small to switch on to Asia Wilson. Oh no, what do I do? So I think that was probably the most fun. It just felt impactful. The Aces felt like they played with more joy. They had a little more wiggle in their step. Everyone kind of just, the ball has energy when Chelsea Gray's on the floor. So I thought that was fun.
Here you go. Should also just, you know, to be responsible, should also state the stat line from Chelsea Gray. 15 minutes and 30 seconds per the W app. 1.4 rebounds, 7 assists, and 2 blocks for Chelsea Gray. But plus 5 in those 15 minutes. So we talk about the impact there. Now, I remember tracking it because PvP stats, y'all should just go to that website. It's really good stuff on the numbers front. But as they were doing, like, the live tracking of the game, got towards the end, and the Aces in the game against Seattle had a 113 offensive rating, pretty much even with what their offensive rating was last year when they set the record for the most efficient offense in W history. It's like, oh, and they did that to a Seattle team that is very good defensively, as we literally talked about on the last episode. And so, it just did not take long. Like, naturally, like, Chelsea, again, played 15 and a half minutes. She wasn't the literal only reason why the offensive rating was that high. Jackie Young absolutely cooked. That was with and without Chelsea on the floor. A little bit of a late surge for Asia, but now it's, 18 straight games with at least 20 points for Asia Wilson. Finished with 27-9. Kelsey Blum, timely shots and timely drives. Like, there are a lot of factors there, but just seeing the impact that Chelsea had on the overall flow was a lot of fun to watch. Excited to see more. We got Ace's son on Friday.
Oh, buddy.
And that matchup, like, one, just two elite teams, or, you know, the Aces have performed as an elite team yet, but we recognize them, especially when healthy, as an elite team. The Sun have just been elite all year long. And that's just, you know, over the past couple of years, that's just been a fun matchup, period. Because I think that's one of the louder examples of, oh, we will just toss all of our matchups around against Vegas and see what they do about it. Like, going back to the 22 finals, seeing DeWanna Bonner just get the Chelsea Gray matchup. Like, you are dealing with all this size and length. We're turning a lot of this into switches. Let's see what y'all do. Getting the stray Alyssa Thomas on Chelsea Gray possessions. So I'm curious to see if they keep Chelsea off the bench. My best guess is that they will in game two. But when she's in, like, what does Connecticut want to do matchup-wise? Who are they putting on Chelsea? What are they trying to take away? I'm just really intrigued to see what that one's going to look like.
It's going to be a fun test for the Sun. I want to see them, like, this little two-game stretch for them where they play the Aces, they play the Storm, both on the road. Okay, not that the Sun are not great. We talked about them last episode. They're very good, very tough to deal with. How good is that good against the top tier? Mm-hmm. You know, because you proved yourself against the Lynx. You beat the Mercury. I know Brittany Griner wasn't there, but boy, you sent a message there.
What did you?
You lost to the Liberty. Okay, so what does this look like against these two teams? Is this going to be a defensive thing where now you can bring them into the mud? Is this going to be the payoff for what you've worked with offensively to get more drives going with Dejanay Carrington and Ty Harris moving? Are we going to figure out what might be the thing that holds you back right now and what you have to improve over the course of the season? That part's going to be fun. So I can't wait for that one.
Here we go. And then just very quickly circling back to the Storm as they kind of cap off their road trip with that loss to the Aces. Their next 9 games, I believe, are at home. They've had a very road-heavy schedule to start the year, which, as you're implementing new talent, not the easiest thing to do in terms of practice time and just in general a bunch of travel. But yeah, they get the Storm, they get the Sun at home, Fever at home, Wings at home, Wings at home, Sky at home, Sky at home, the Aces at home, the Lynx at home, the Dream at home. You got to be looking at if they go 6-3 during that stretch, 7-2 during that stretch. The Storm are already in good position, but you get this kind of homestand, like you really have an opportunity to establish yourself towards the top of the standings.
Nikias, they play one road game before the Olympic break. They only have one road game before the Olympic break. That's kind of crazy, right?
Yes, and that one road game is against the Los Angeles Sparks, who, again, unfortunate that, of course, but like they just lost Cam Brink. If you think about what NECA and Ezzy have been able to do in the front court this year, it's probably helpful that you don't have that kind of shot blocking Roman the paint. And just in terms of how important the drives for the Storm have been in particular, probably helpful that Cam Brink won't be in that game for Seattle. So like this is a very important stretch for the Seattle Storm. And I think if we start to see the offensive flow just perk up, period, with them, having all this practice time is going to be super helpful. Again, had the Aces game on Wednesday. They don't play again until Sunday. And then after that, it's a 3.5-4 day break until they play the Fever on Thursday. So you're starting to see more and more of these gaps where teams can just take a deep breath. Let's review some film. Let's actually run through a whole bunch of stuff in practice and get more situated. So important stretch coming up for the Seattle Storm. Any game or any team or any player popping for you since last time?
Bridget Carlton's threes. She keeps taking them and she keeps making them.
Yeah, she's a little more comfortable out there.
It's very comfortable. The Minnesota Lynx being able to win a gross game, I think, is significant. Hey, what happens if we shoot 7 of 22 from three? Can we still win? Yeah, we can. All right, cool. I think that's significant. The top six, like, it's just kind of fascinating to kind of watch them as they play each other and as they grow. It's hard. Like, this feels like a year where you want to get a top two seed. I'm not even going to lie to you. 3-6 and 4-5 are going to be just disgusting matchups to start your playoffs. Actually, who would that be? It'd be Liberty Mercury.
I was just pulling
Liberty Mercury and Storm Aces if the season ended today. Let me tell you, hey, if you're the New York Liberty, stay away from the Mercury.
Hey, a whole lot of threes in that Liberty Mercury game.
It was record setting, I believe.
Yeah, we get them up.
That was...
And then, very quickly, I guess two things very quickly. One, on the Bridget Carlton front, her career high in three-point attempts per game before the season was 2.3. She has more than doubled that so far this year, taking 4.7 and shooting nearly 46% on those threes. I think the Lynx would take that volume and also that efficiency. And then just back to the Mercury Liberty game. Like, one, that was just a very fascinating basketball game. And just watching both teams and their spacing principles just as a basketball nerd just really intrigued me. Again, we talked about the threes and those record-setting performance in terms of the combined threes and stuff like that. And then there was just one waved off from Kayla Thornton, which I still don't understand. I know we don't do a lot of rough talk on the podcast. I don't understand how that was waved off. I do not get it. Have you seen the post-game clip of, I think, our mutual pal Miles Ehrlich asking Sandy if she got an explanation on the call, and Breonna Stewart looks up like she wanted to like yell about it. She's like, you actually, never mind. It's not anymore. Do that. Find that clip on Twitter. I got a good laugh out of that one. Stewie was not pleased, but she also knows y'all ain't about to get my money for commenting on this. So I am going to stay quiet. Veteran savvy. But no, it was just a lot of fun. It kind of circles back into kind of what we talked about with both of these teams on the last pod. Just how much pressure they can put on you and how many ways that they can ding you offensively. So watching them battle it out was just a lot of fun for me.
Can I be respectfully messy real quick?
Sure.
Is Rebecca Allen ever going to let the Liberty have peace ever again?
No.
How many times is she going to show up in all black and just like, all right, man.
Hey, I know you get annoyed sometimes when I do the revenge game bit. There aren't many more pure examples of the revenge game bit than Rebecca Allen when she sees the New York Liberty on the schedule. It is on site.
Every time. Every single time. Also, salute Stephanie Dolson. Shooting
the basketball. Listen, I very valuable screener, can be used as a hub, can knock down threes. It has been very refreshing watching her just take threes in volume. It's a very simple thing, and the Mystics offense certainly needs it, which, you know, circling back to the injury front, I just want them to be healthy, dude. I want Shakira Austin, the hip, to be okay. Brittany Sykes comes back. They win. Brittany Sykes gets hurt again. It's just like, dog, please. Like, you know, helpful for the lottery odds if you care about that part. But, like, just, again, these players as humans, I would like for them to be able to play basketball consistently. These are good players that the Mystics just largely have not had this season. And I think that naturally plays a big part in what their record is. Like, in terms of them being healthy, when they are healthy, like, their record is not indicative of how good of a team this is. And this is while recognizing, like, I don't think the Mystics, when healthy, are a contender. But, like, I do think it wouldn't have surprised, if they stay healthy all year, like, it wouldn't have surprised me if they were, like, 5 or 6 or in the 5, 6, 7 range this year. And, like, they're just not going to hit that at this pace because of the injury. So, just unfortunate on that front. But I do echo your sentiment, though. Like, shout out Stephanie Dolson, just taking and making a bunch of shots from the perimeter. They need that. If I can quickly pull it. 45.3% from three this year. She's taking 4.3 attempts. Her previous career high in attempts was 2.4. Similar to Bridget Carlton, I think the Mystics will take that volume and also that efficiency. Any more shout outs you want to give?
None at the moment. None at the moment. You?
Okay, we'll be circling back. I know the Storm lost last night, but just a general hat tip to Jordan Horston. She has just been really impactful off the bench for them. And it's, again, mostly a continuation of what we saw last year, but just watching Noel Quinn call her up, like, hey, actually, you're guarding insert star here. We need you to turn that water off, or at the very least, turn the faucet down a little bit. And just watching Jordan slide up and down the positional spectrum defensively. When she gets the grab and goes, when she's able to just attack, period. Like, the drives have been fun. She's more than comfortable getting all the way downhill or just kind of stopping on the dime, going to a pull-up or a little push shot. I want the jumper to come around so she can really become the full-fledged version of what she can be, but she is just a very versatile piece. And, like, we were talking about Gabby Williams a little bit in the watch party last night. And I don't think it's a one-to-one comparison to what Jordan is and what Gabby Williams was in Seattle. But, like, you can see the shades of, you can do whatever we ask you to do. You don't need the ball in your hands to be effective because you can do screening things. You can do cutting things. You can get the occasional offensive rebound. If we put the ball in your hands, we trust that you will drive and keep things moving. Or if they put a smaller slash weaker defender on you, you can just win that. And then defensively, again, just guard whoever. So you at least get kind of like the skeleton of, or like the outline of, what they wanted from Gabby in years past and what they're getting from Jordan. So I just wanted to give her the shout there. Like, it's been really good stuff. And, like, she's been coming off the bench, but, like, she's been starting some second halves. It's clear that Noel Quinn loves and trusts her. And so just continue to track that development because, you know, as we talked about in the contender episode, like, who the fifth is going to be for Seattle is going to end up being important once you get into the postseason. In an ideal world, you can go to multiple options depending on what you need. But if Jordan firmly established herself as, I am just the best option, period, I think that bodes well for Seattle this year and moving forward. So just a quick hat tip there. All right. Let's get into the mailbag. Once again, thank you to those who sent in questions. If you have basketball questions for us at any time, you can email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Did I miss something?
I need to get the password. This feels like the most Nikias influenced mailbag we've had
in recent history. Also, let me stop you right there. What you mean you need to get the password?
To the mailbag. I think we got a great question here off rip.
I tell you what, this man's gotten the password like 8 different times. Okay, anyway, we start the mailbag. The question from Carla, who says, hi, with like 8 eyes. I appreciate that. We love the happy intro. Thank you for all your reporting and analysis on the NBA this season. Looking forward to upcoming W coverage. I love seeing you both all over the place in the NBA and WNBA media. Coach's Corner, Low Post, Old Man the Three Things, post-game mentions for Becky Hammon and more. It's really incredible. Thank you. I would love to hear your thoughts on analytics and WNBA coaching and where you see it going. It seems like girl dad, Nate Tibbetts, is really bringing an NBA-style approach to three-point analytics, while Christy Sides recently said Caitlin Clark needs to work on deep twos. As someone who consumes a ton of NBA and WNBA games, media articles, I just don't feel like I hear as much or really anything about stats and analytics in the W. Do you think NBA analytics can be applied directly to the WNBA, or is the game different enough that the approach needs to be tweaked? Will having second spectrum possibly change things, or is it currently more analytics based than it appears from the outside due to lack of media coverage and questions for players and coaches that are just about and are just about one person on horror files? P.S. I ran my first marathon last year and I used Steve's feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here as one of my running mantras to help me get through tough runs. Thank you.
Yeah,
for that.
Carl. Yeah, Carla. Give it up for Carla. Fire.
Hey, the impact of the dunker spot. Uh-huh. That's what I'm talking about.
No, I like that. That's fantastic. Great question, by the way. Nikias, I'm going to immediately dribble handoff to you because I know you have thoughts on this.
Well, as funny as that setup is, I do indeed have thoughts on this front. I would just say, especially through the analytics lens, like I think the biggest difference between the NBA and the WNBA is just access. And like you can use Second Spectrum as a jumping off point. As DW literally just got Second Spectrum access this year, while the NBA has had, you know, they had sport, you know, in terms of the tracking data, like they had Sport VU for a while, then they moved to Second Spectrum and all that. Like they've just had that. And even with the Second Spectrum access this year, like one, we got the announcement last year and thought that was going to be like a second half of the year thing. And it just did not come until this season. So you already got the delay there. And then on top of that, they only have the camera set up in like the base arenas. And so like with the Sparks, you know, they didn't play their first couple of home games in the artist formerly known as Staples Center. And so in those games, like as someone that has like can get to Second Spectrum, can get to Synergy, like you can see the stuff on Synergy, but you don't have it on Second Spectrum because they didn't have the camera set up for that game. And so like even with that, you don't get the same things, at least like on the public side. So I'm sure like the actual team staffers probably have that info. But I think just in terms of access, I think that's where you get the biggest difference. And that's why you don't see maybe the kind of influence that you see on the NBA side. And like, especially speaking from someone that's on the outside, like that's in media or like speaking for fans in general, like any NBA fan that cares about it can hop on NBA.com, not pay anything, and get how many drives a certain player had in the game, how many post touches, how many deflections, et cetera, et cetera. On the W side, you either have to track it yourself or know someone that has access to like a Second Spectrum, or know someone or have the money to pay for a Synergy account to get more of the advanced things. And so like to the media point about not asking about it or having that kind of influence in their work, a lot of people I know are interested in and just don't have that kind of access. And so I think as Second Spectrum in particular gets more, as they're able to get more out of Second Spectrum, teams get more familiar with it, et cetera. And as it expands, you may see more of like the NBA side to where, again, you can get some of the Second Spectrum data public, not have to pay anything. And then there's just other stuff that you can only see if you have a true blue Second Spectrum account. I think at some point we'll be able to see like drives per game on WNBA.com. That may be like a year or two out. And so like, I think that's where you just kind of have to be patient. And then it also goes to like an overall analytics thing because the resources haven't been put into it. And that could be a whole nother podcast. about just the, how the W is covered, et cetera. But that's where, you know what I'm saying, like there's a clean in the glass for the NBA. We don't have that for the W right now. There's, you know, EPM and, you know, dunksandthrees.com. I'll cite that all the time with EPM and stuff like that. They have that for the NBA. We don't have that for the W yet. I think as the game grows, as more resources are available, as more people can be paid livable wages to like cover it the way they want to, you'll see more people that already have the heart and have the info, you know, to have the desire to do it, might just say, you know what, actually, I want to take this summer to build out a W database of XYZ and just do it. Because that's largely what's happened on the NBA side and why you have all these different NBA advanced sites and stuff before even getting into the tracking data. But that's where you have all these advanced numbers, where on the NBA, on the W side right now, it's like we're still citing PER. You know what I mean? Because we just don't have EPM and BPM and LeBron or whatever the W equivalent acronym would be whenever, if it's created. You know what I'm saying? We just don't have that yet. So I don't think, at least from my view, I don't think it's a lack of desire to put that information out there. It's more so like a lack of resources and ultimately a lack of access for the advanced stuff that exists right now to where you can't really get it in the mainstream yet. So hopefully that grows. Like, I'm certainly doing my part. I'll sprinkle in second spectrum stats on here when I can. But I do think it's going to be a minute before it becomes more widespread.
There we go. See, I knew you had thoughts. That's what I'm talking about. My mind kind of just went to, and I'm glad you touched on it. I knew you would. But my mind went to how much of it is also just different style of play to a degree, to where there are different things that are valued. And there are different things that are possible, you know, where bigs have a higher value. There's more post-ups to a degree. Pick and roll coverages are a little different. So a drop might be a pocket pass more than a pull-up. Or blitz, 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 pre-rotations. Okay, that corner skip isn't always there. You know what I mean? It's not like an automatic. Like, my mind went to what kind of shots can teams constantly, like consistently generate? I don't know if you can copy paste it in the same way to a degree. Like, you look at like the Wings, I think they still lead the league in points in the paint. The type of shots they generate, it's not something that you can just replicate if you don't have that personnel. You know what I mean? The Mercury kind of want to play that style, but they have the personnel to play that style. The Sun probably have to hit some of these threes, but they're only going to take so many of them. So I think, I wonder how much just who we are and what we do factors into it as well. So I was kind of looking at it. You look at the Indiana Fever and kind of their shift. Some of it's flow, but it's also, oh, they're driving more. And they're now able to generate shots in a different way that's not just pick and roll. So I went down a mini rabbit hole, Nikias.
Ah, we did
just it. Just a mini one, because I was thinking about threes, right? So in 2022, four teams had 25 or more threes attempted per game. It was the Liberty, the Mercury, the Aces, and the Storm. In 2023, there was one team that had 25 or more threes attempted. It was the New York Liberty. Although, shout out to the Aces, they were at 24.9. In 2024, there are five teams that are attempting 25 or more threes a night. The Liberty, the Mercury, the Aces, the Mystics, and the Lynx. Now, there's one team in there this year that I ask, do they want to take that many threes? Or a team saying, go ahead and take that many threes. And that's where my mind was like, hey, can you copy paste it? Because you look at kind of those top teams, they generate them in different ways. The Lynx are just five out heavy. Like, hey, does not matter who's on the court. This spacing is the spacing. You got Dorka putting up the three every time. Like, that's one of my favorite parts to watch. The Mercury, you're going to let it fly. The Aces get their threes in different ways. So that's where my mind went to. What do you think of that portion of it?
No. I think that's fair. And I think the W isn't quite at, you know, if we just limited to three-point shooting. Like, I don't think the W is at that boon yet. It's been moving towards that for sure. Like, we've seen, you know, you talked about the Liberty. We've seen the Becky influence with just spacing in general and the kind of threes that can be generated based off of that. Nate Tibbetts in Phoenix, like, he's talked about, hey, we want to get up 40 a game. And it's like, oh, that's a hefty number, especially within the W style, where, again, 40-minute games in the W, 48-minute games in the NBA. So, like, even if you're comparing, like, per 40 minutes, you know, for both leagues or something. Like, those numbers probably get interesting. But because that boon isn't there yet in terms of just the pure snipers, and more importantly, as we've seen on the NBA side, like the pull-up threes, we haven't had, I think that's part of the basketball-related excitement with Caitlin Clark as someone that could really push for the I will shoot this from anywhere. If you play any sort of drop, or if it's a drop by default because of how high the screen is going to be, I will take this pull-up. And I think, like, league-wide, again, there are players that are willing to take deep pull-ups, like Sabrina before Caitlin, Dana Evans will do it. But, like, largely, we don't have the abundance of high pick-and-roll drop coverage pull-up threes. And because you don't have that volume to a large degree yet, like, I don't think you have the full three-point boom like we see in the NBA, at least not yet. I think that's coming with this new crop of guards and stuff. And I'm curious to see, like, what that does to the overall play style of the league as it, you know, much like the NBA, it does become a bit of a copy and paste. Oh, this team's successful. Let's see if we can build a boat this way. Or at the very least, let's build a boat to where we can defend this more readily and force a shift that way. But I think the types of shots you can generate is dictated by the overall personnel in the league right now. And, like, because we don't have that portion in abundance yet, that's probably where it's still, the bigs still have more value, still more inside out. Like, even if it's just drive and kick, like, we want to get inside the paint first versus really being able to build something outside in.
Well, that sent me down a quick rabbit hole as far as, so players that took six or more threes in 2021, there's only five. Diantha Rossi, Arike, Kelsey Mitchell, Ariel Atkins, Sammy Wickham. The next year, it grew to seven. Dan Taurasi, Arike, Kelsey Plum, Ryan Howard, Sabrina, Sophie Cunningham, Jewel Lloyd. In 2023, guess where that number was? Eight. Arike, Jewel, Sabrina, Ryan Howard, Dan Taurasi, Kelsey Mitchell, Kayla McBride, Kelsey Plum. Do you know where we're at this year?
Where the?
10.
There we go.
Welcome in Jackie Young and Marina Mabry and Kalia Copper and Caitlin Clark.
And there you go. And like, there you go. And again, like, even with that list, like, those are just who's taking the threes. If we were to filter that for, hey, how many players are taking four pull-up threes a game? Mm-hmm. I would imagine that list shrinks significantly. And even as you were tossing out, like, the number, the totals there, I went to the NBA side real quick during the regular season. There were 16 players that averaged at least 8 3-point attempts per game. And so, like, it's just a different dynamic on that front. And again, like, I think that will eventually shift. Like, as we get, you know, saying this generation of guards that grew up watching, you know, on the NBA side, watching Steph, watching Dame, et cetera, on the W side, getting to watch the pull-up threes from maybe not Diana, since that'd be more late career for her, but, like, getting to watch Sabrina in particular, now getting to watch Caitlin. And depending on where you're born again, getting to watch Dana Evans, getting to watch Arike, that are willing to take these deep pull-up threes. You'll start to see that influence trickle down on this next set of guards who can also do the driving stuff. And I think as we get, when we get the true guard revolution in the W, on the pull-up front, things get really fun stylistically. Because I think you'll just have at least early on, you'll just have the balance of half the league's probably still going to be this. The other half, we're going to be bombing away. And like just having that kind of stylistic class, I think, leads to a lot of fun. Any closing thoughts before we move to the next one?
Nah, great question. Salute to Carla.
There we go. Shout out to feeling good, feeling great, and being happy to be here. We have the first of two questions from Teej. We're saving the second question for last because that is indeed the one that I spent an ungodly amount of time on trying to prepare and think about. But from our dear pal Teej, I've heard it said that in the NBA, bigs have the most difficult learning curve once they make it to the league. One, why is that? Two, is it the same in the W? Three, if not, in your opinion, which position has the most difficult learning curve in the W and why?
I mean, I think for me with bigs, it's always been, okay, your defense has to get to a certain level. You have to understand the speed of the game on both ends of the floor because they're going to need your screening. They're going to need you to contain whatever the pick and roll scheme is. And that's not easy to pick up. Like, I think guards in general also have a tough time learning how to make reads, but the game is shifting. Those can kind of be taught. And with more playmaking on the court and quicker pace, you don't have to necessarily carry a team's playmaking in that same degree. Whereas I think if you're a big, you get drafted, there's an expectation. If you don't hit those, then, hey, we got to go in a different direction. I don't think it's the same in the W. I think being a guard is a little bit tougher in the W as far as understanding the adjustment to, well, there are blitzes, well, there's size, well, there's length. Where am I going to get, where am I going to create from? How am I going to get my shots? Especially if you go from college to the W, like we've seen it with Kelsey, we've seen it with Sabrina, we've seen it with Caitlin Clark. It's not easy to take that and carry it over into a smaller window to a degree. So I'd probably go there. What do you think?
I guess I've kind of been swayed on the big portion on the NBA side. Cause like my initial thought was like, I still feel like it's guards. Like even as the game has become more spread out and you can kind of drill stuff, like there's still an element of creation that is just difficult to deal with opposing guards. And if you're going from the college game to the NBA game, like there's more space for you to navigate on both ends. And so even if it's easier for you to make offensive reads, now you're having to navigate screens on the other end against really skilled veteran guards. It's like, oh, longer games, more space, harder screens to navigate, et cetera. This is a whole lot of stuff. But to the big portion about having to nail defense, and even on the other end, like having to nail the screen, when to slip, which side I'm turning to. If it's a short roll opportunity, how quickly can I nail this read? And then defensively, you just got to not be able to foul and also have to defend in the space a whole bunch. Like I could be swayed on centers or just bigs having a more difficult transition than guards. On the W side, like I am with you, like I do think it is just harder to be a really good guard in the W than elsewhere. The threshold to hit elite in the guard room is just really, 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 really high. And like we're seeing it with Caitlin, who is, you know, overall having a really good rookie campaign. And like at minimum, like we're going to do a rookie of the year discussion soon. But like at minimum, she is top two. I'd imagine she's like still the favorite overall. But that's a tight slash fun rookie of the year race if you lean into the fun portion of it. But even with Caitlin, like you see the turnover numbers. And you saw what the adjustment had to be from when she was getting blitzed. Like, oh, this is a lot more ball pressure earlier. In addition to these bigs are chewing up space fast when they hedge or when they trap. I got to be able to get this out of here, or I got to be able to string this out. And like watching that adjustment period has been interesting. And that's with Caitlin, who by all my like generational prospect. And so think about the non Caitlin level guards that come in. It's like, oh, this might take some time. So I think I still leave a guard on that front. Like just dealing with that level of ball pressure and again, having to defend on the other end in more space against better competition like that is just really difficult to deal with. Next question is going to come from JP. Who says, hello, I've got a question about how we talk about players in the league, especially their biomechanics. So I was watching some K-pop content. Now hear me out, please. And the video creator explained each move during a song's dance break and explained how every member of the K-pop group executed. Small details like someone not bending low enough or being too focused on an upper body movement and letting their lower body go out of sync. This got me thinking, why does K-pop have more in-depth scouting reports than basketball? I feel that this kind of content only exists during NBA draft season where there's all these biomechanical video breakdowns like on a player's jump shot or lateral movement. But why does this energy go away when a player is actually in the league?
This is right up your alley. I mean, I don't know if you ever asked someone if they've got G's, but JP got you.
Yes. Hey, okay. Anyway.
We got him.
Gosh, darn it. Oh, but to that point, I think it's easier to focus in on prospects in that way versus NBA players. There's just a whole lot of live action. You're just kind of trying to get game to game versus breaking down why a player doesn't move well laterally or does. Like, I think you do see it. I guess I agree generally that you don't see it widespread, especially not in comparison to like draft time. I do think more of that content is perking up. Like one, there's just a whole Twitter account dedicated to it, doing jump shot things, stuff like that. And like, even with me as someone that is not a big biomechanics person, like I have been nerding out a lot over the past couple of seasons in general with like stride length and like stride length at different angles, deceleration, stuff like that. So like, it's perking up for me. But like, I think that's going to continue to come. Like, I think it circles back to the earlier conversation about it's more so analytics, but I guess just in general access to different things. And I think more people are learning about the biomechanical side And on the NBA side in particular, like, you just have a lot more access to, like, player videos. Like, you don't need to have Second Spectrum or Synergy to be able to pull Jason Tatum's driving layup in the third quarter. Like, you can just get that from NBA.com or various other ways. And so I think that allows for more opportunity for people that have the interest in the field to be able to slow down clips if you have, like, iMovie or something like that. And, hey, how was he able to generate this separation? Hey, this player is shooting 30% from three over his last five. What's happening with this jumper? And you just have a lot more tools available to you to be able to slow down clips and look at what's going on. Is there a hitch here? What's going on with the, you know, what's going on with the load up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I do think I've seen more of that content pop up. I think it's going to continue to perk up. I don't know if we ever get the volume to be the same during NBA season versus during draft season, outside of like the star class or insert young player making a leap in this specific area. But I do think we're going to start seeing more of that.
I think there's plenty of it. I just wonder, is it more impactful during draft season than during the NBA season? Because there's a projection element to the draft where, hey, this is why this might work. So you might lock in more, or people might do it more. For me, I think when it comes to like during the season, I think you see people focusing on footwork. Nikias talks about deceleration all the time. So I think it exists. That's all I got.
We getting there. Fair enough.
But I mean, you can tell. You can tell like a shooter's footwork. I think that's important to talk about. Like you can tell. I think it just comes off in different ways, because like if we're talking about screen navigation, you're kind of talking about some of that, but you're not focusing in on specifically that portion of it. But I think there are people who do a really good job of highlighting that. I think it's a different feel when it's the draft.
Yeah. And like I think that now we can move after this, but like again, like I agree that it isn't as widespread as it is during draft season, but like I think one of the earlier like stories on that front that I remember as someone that wasn't even doing, you know, that kind of analysis like that, was the whole Miles Turner thing when he was coming in, when they were like literally trying to change how Miles Turner runs. And that becoming a big portion of why he improved the way he did early in his career. And like, and obviously like he's a really good player right now, but it's just like, okay. So, like for me, like it has existed for sure. And I think we're going to see more. There's also just a whole like career angle that we can tap into, but again, that's a whole nother podcast. But we can now move. Hashtag pivots. All right. Next question going to come from Spencer. We'll note this one came on June 15th. I think that was this past Saturday. So this is coming after the Aces Liberty game. But Spencer says, hey, Nikias and Steve, thank you guys for the depth of your coverage, especially on all things W. It's been super helpful and making me more knowledgeable and passionate about the game. Thank you. As a Liberty fan, I'm currently riding high on the big win over the Aces today and generally feeling pretty good about the season so far. However, we're now more than a third of the way through the season, and Stewie is still shooting sub 20% from three. The offense has generally been successful in spite of this, but I'm concerned about what they'll do if she never gets back to her outside shot being a consistent threat, particularly once Courtney Vandersloot is back in the lineup. Will they just rely on more Sabrina drives, given her improvements on that front, or maybe finally give Jonquil Jones some more well-deserved touches? Stewie's shooting really opened up a lot last year, and while they haven't had to rely on her in the same way, I still have concerns about the half-court offense when shots aren't falling. So we'll start there because he has a secondary question about the Liberty's lineups. But do you have any real Stewie concerns about the shooting?
I mean, considering that the next game that they played was against the Mercury, a loss, and Stewie went 4-for-4 from three, I'm going to go with no. I think the shooting will perk back up, even if it's not as high as it's been before. Teams don't want to leave Breanna Stewart open from three. So she's going to be a natural threat out there. And the way the Liberty space the floor and the type of shots they can generate, I think you live with it. It's not like they have to be of the pull-up variety. You know what I mean? That would probably be the concerning portion for me. So I'm not that concerned with it. I think the Liberty have done a good job trying to balance out the offense, and this is a part of it.
And like even to, you know, Spencer's question, like the fact that you have the option to, hey, they could just lean more on Sabrina. Sabrina's an all W talent. Hey, they could just give Jonquil more touches. Jonquil's a former MVP. So, like, even in the doomsday scenario that Stewie just can't shoot threes this year, you have two other all-W talents that you could lean on and be able to generate good offense. And as of recording right now, the New York Liberty, in the midst of the Stewie struggles, have the best offensive rating in the W.
Oh, he said it.
So, here we go. The Aces are second. But I just, you know, I don't worry too much on that front. And I guess just with Stewie specifically, very much in the Kaius thing, and I'm sure Steve will be prepared to roll his eyes, I care way more about Stewie being able to get to the rim than I do if the three-point shot is falling or not.
Oh, okay.
See?
All right.
There it is. If there's a problem area for Stewie, it's just like, hey, what? Are we able to get these shots from here?
Can I clean the palette with a fun fact?
Yes, you can.
All right. So I just looked at this very quickly. So bear with me. So there are 7 games where Breanna Stewart has gone 0-for from 3. Would you like to guess this season? Would you like to guess the Liberty's record in those games?
Are they 6-1?
7-0.
That's pretty
neat. Lost any of those games where Stewie has gone 0-for from 3. So, hey, it'd be what it be sometimes.
That is a fun fact. That's a... Well, there you go. All right, and then the second part of the question. I also wanted to ask for your takes on the Liberty's best lineup. I know that the traditional starting five have had a lot of success over the last couple of years, and they've been great with Caleb Thornton replacing Stewart over the last stretch. But the one I'm most intrigued by is when they shift Sabrina to the one and play Leonie Feverish with Benaiah Delaney Hamilton. I love the defensive player of the year parenthetical in here. But Benaiah Delaney Hamilton, Breanna Stewart, and Jonquel Jones. Am I wrong to want them to close with those five?
I don't think you're wrong. I think the biggest part for the Liberty and what they tried to build with this team is, hey, we have options. Mm-hmm. You can ask this question as opposed to last year where it was like, hey, Marine's got it going, so let's roll with that. You know? Or, hey, we need defense, so Caleb Thornton has to play. You can kind of play around with it a bit. I would understand because that lineup has what you want versatility-wise. You can do a lot of things defensively. Offensively, you don't change and miss a beat. I guess it depends on the matchup. And so do you need that level of defense? Because I think Sloop still has a lot of value. So I guess the optionality is more important to me.
Gotcha. And just to bounce off of that, like, no, I don't think you're wrong. Just pulled up the lineup data very quickly. 62 minutes with that five on the floor. Sabrina, Benaiah, Stewie, Feverish, and Jonquel Jones. 62 minutes, a plus 13.9 net rating, a 109.8 offensive rating, which is higher than the regular season mark. And again, the Liberty had the best offense in the league right now. A 109.8 offensive rating while shooting 21.7% from three with that group. So, in short, that could be better. And they have like a 95 defensive rating in that group, plus 17 in 62 minutes overall. So, yeah, I'm not mad at all at you wanting to see that lineup a little bit more. Again, like, I think that's, you know, going with Leo versus Kayla, as Kayla can knock down open shots from the corner. Leo is, I think, is just a better shooter, at the very least a more feared shooter, and, you know, can space out on the wings and space purely above the break and space from the corners, etc. Versus Kayla, where you mostly just want her in the corners. And then still being able to have that kind of size versatility defensively on top of that. Like, I understand why you want that. But like, as Steve said, like, them being able to say, we can go Sloop if we need more playmaking and we want to get Sabrina off the ball. We can go Leo if you want the size plus shooting. We can go Kayla if we want a little bit more physicality defensively and more of the slashing and offensive rebounding on top of that. Like, that's the fun. That you can sprinkle all those options in if you want to. So I like that question, though. That's good stuff. Always fun to kind of dig into some lineup stuff. You know me. And as our closer, we circle back to Teach, who says, given the upcoming expansions, list the 6 players you think each team would protect. With the remaining players in the league, can you each create a hypothetical expansion team?
I'm deferring to you, guys.
You're defining. Okay, so the first portion was trying to figure out who the 6 players that would be protected.
Now, wait, before you go, I'm deferring because I know Nakai has spent a lot of time on this.
Boy, did I. Listen. Thought way too much about this. But the first part was trying to figure out who were going to be the six that each team would protect. As I got to a lot of these teams, I was like, you know what? It made me think about what the expansion rules were, like what the wording of the rules were. Was it you have to protect six or you can protect up to six? Because I feel like if it's the latter, like some of these decisions I think could just get kind of funny with some of these teams. Because there were a few where I was like, you know what? I feel like they would only protect these three. And like there are other three players you can make arguments for, but I feel like these are just kind of the locks. And some may just want, you know, for salary reasons or whatever the case may be. It's like, hey, if you want to take this, you can, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, so trying to figure out the six, this is where I landed. In the Eastern Conference, starting with Atlanta, I think the Dream would protect Ryan Howard, Alicia Gray, Jordan Canada, Cheyenne Parker-Tyus, Haley Jones, and Nia Coffey, which, you know, notable names not listed there would be Tina Charles, Nas Hillman, Ariel Powers. Those are a few. With Chicago, Marina Mabry, Angel Reese, Camila Cardoso, Elizabeth Williams. And I went with both of the, I guess I went with two guards. I went with Kennedy Carter and Dana Evans. Once I got past Elizabeth Williams, I was like, Because like there's the investment in Dana. Kennedy has just been their best guard so far this year. But like it very much felt like they have four locks and then here are two more versus these are six players, no doubts about it. So like Mikaela Onyewere, Diamond DeShields, who they just brought back, Izzy Harrison, who hasn't really gotten a real run in Chicago until this year because of injury stuff. So like those are some players that would be available for Chicago. For Connecticut, Alyssa Thomas, DeWanna Bonner, Bree Jones, DeJounay Carrington, Ty Harris, and Olivia Nelson-Adota is where I landed. With Indiana, Caitlin Clark, Aaliyah Boston, Kelsey Mitchell, and Alyssa Smith. Those were my locks for Indiana. And I was like, hey, whomps do they want to keep? Or whomps do they really just want to lock in on? Because, like, they just drafted Celeste, but she doesn't play. Like, Grace hasn't really played like that. Lexi Hull back in the rotation. Naturally, Erica Wheeler was the highest paid player in the W last year. But because of the contract, like, would they protect that or hope that expansion team takes on that contract? Like, I don't, like, that's where my mind started doing the thing. I landed on Lexi and Grace. And I also like Timmy's been really good, but like also Timmy reserved big, also injured right now. So like I don't know if they would protect her. That might be a we leave her unprotected, but we just keep her because they don't take her type situation. But Lexi and Grace were where I landed on the final two spots there. With New York, it was relatively simple for me. Stewie, JJ, Sabrina, Benaja, Sloot, and Kayla Thornton. For Washington, Brittany Sykes, Ariel Atkins, Shakira Austin, Aaliyah Edwards. I landed on Carly Samuelson and Stephanie Dolson as the final two. Then in the West with Dallas, Arike, Satu, Natasha Howard, Tierra McCowan, Kalani Brown, and then I was just in a headlock with who the sixth player would be with Dallas. I landed on JC Sheldon. But like they just have a lot of players that like very strong argument for Maddie Seegers, but it's just like, well, if we're protecting three front court players already, or I guess technically four, if you consider Satu like more of a 3-4, then it's like, okay, are they going to protect Maddie? That may be another situation where we leave her unprotected, but I don't know if she gets picked. So we may still just get to keep her anyway. So I landed JC over Maddie there, but that was a tough one. With the Aces, Asia, Jackie, Kelsey, Chelsea, seemed like a very easy four. And then from there, I was like, wait, who are the other two here? And so I ultimately landed on Kia Stokes and Kate Martin. I think Kate has showcased enough of the gap filling and competing defensively, also being on rookie scale contract, can play off of the stars to where if they want to downsize, you can go with Kate and feel good about it. And to have the Asia at the four capabilities, and with how important Kia Stokes has been to the group over the past few years and how much Asia loves Kia in particular, I think they would lean Kia. But I had a really tough time with like picking two of Kia, Alicia Clark, and Kate Martin. And at that point, I was like, okay, I think they want to have the size up ability of Kia. And then from there, it's like Kate versus Alicia. And it's just like, well, this is rookie scale versus vet. And while recognizing Alicia is just better than Kate Martin right now, like we're just going into contract protection. Like, I feel like they would go with the rookie scale deal, especially in light of like their core four has already been taking less money to stay together and try to open up optionality and stuff for agency. So I didn't feel good about that one, but like that's where I landed with the Aces. With the Sparks, Cam Brink, Rekia Jackson, De'Erica Hamby, Azaree Stevens, Lexi Brown, and Ari McDonald is where I went. With the Lynx, Nafisa Collier, Diamond Miller, Kayla McBride, Alana Smith, Courtney Williams, and Dorca Juhas. So Bridget Carlton available. And spoiler alert, she is indeed on my expansion team. For Phoenix, Brittany Griner, Kalia Copper, Diana Taurasi, Natasha Cloud, Beck Allen, and Sophie Cunningham. That was pretty easy. And for Seattle, Neko Gumake, Jewel Lloyd, Skylar Diggins-Smith, Ezzy Matt Begor, Jordan Horston. And then I was in a headlock on that sixth spot. I landed on Nika Mule, but I think you have arguments for Sammy Whitcomb there. But yeah. So those are the 72 protected players, if I can do math.
Okay. So
who did you build for the franchise?
Okay, so that's where Nakai has put himself in yet another headlock. Yeah. So I was like, hey, do I want to just go youth movement? We gonna be real bad. We gonna aim for this 2026 draft, etc. Or do I want to just field a competitive team now and then kind of move from there? So I landed on the latter. And so the guards that I have, Laysha Clarendon, Julie Van Loo, Sammy Whitcomb, the wings that I have, Tiffany Hayes, Bridget Carlton, Leo Feebish. The forwards that I have, Alicia Clark, Maddie Segris, and Alyssa Peely. And the bigs, Tina Charles and Niara Sabali. So we did go with the full 12 versus having 11.
Interesting. I like it.
So there we go.
It's great.
One of the post thread. We got drivers all over the place. We got some shooting. We can't size down necessarily. We got Nayara behind Tina Charles. We want to be more switchable and keep some size on the front court. We can do that. So yeah, we got some optionality with the group. Like this does still very much feel like we are going 11 and 29, but we do have some elements of playing some Nakia's ball. So I think that's where we start, and then we crush the draft. We crush free agency from there.
So I'm talking about. I think Canada will salute you for that.
Okay. It's a tremendous shot. So, Steve, who did you have?
No.
Well, if you'd like to yell at Steve in the emails, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That's amazing. So this is the official Dunker Spot team. So, yeah.
Should have brought the fire back.
Oh, that's amazing. Shout out to the insert team, city name here, Dunkers. The inaugural season's in 2026. All right, Steve, any closing thoughts? Any free throws or anything you want to get out before we head?
Nope.
All right, fair enough. All righty, thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Excuse me, RIP Google. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NakaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you haven't already. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. The NBA season is done, but basketball is not. So come rock with us. Fun second screen experience. But when my internet works, we also go over plays that are happening live. So pray for my internet. But come have some fun with us. We're talking hoops. We're having a whole lot of fun. So if you want a space to rock with during the summer, there you go. The link is in the description. It is free to create your profile. No shenanigans. Come have some fun with us. Should have mentioned it earlier, but you can listen to us, subscribe to us, Apple, all that good stuff. Every Tuesday, that is the day after Monday, the day before Wednesday, we are on JJ Reddit's YouTube channel. So if you want the visual element, some plays spliced in, you get to see the Steve reactions when I say something ridiculous. Check out the JJ Reddit YouTube channel every Tuesday. And overall, there's a lot of great content dropping throughout the week. You don't want to miss any of that. But with that, we will catch y'all next week.